Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey towards truth, traveling through our dreams and an inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All Roads Lead 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. My focus is my mission statement, to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring Jewels to become leaders by establishing partnerships with entrepreneurs, corporations, donors, sponsors, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Please join me every other Tuesday at noon on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio, and follow me here on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. My special guest today is Mr. Joe Kaufman, who is a conservative Republican nominee for U.S. Congress, Florida District 23. Dedicated to protecting America and its allies from threats, both foreign and domestic. Joe is a counterterrorism expert who is a passionate advocate to secure borders, school choice, and economic growth. He has a distinguished record in foreign policy. At last, I want to say thank you for giving me this interview chance, Mr. Kaufman, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pamela. Great to be here.
So welcome. Now, I must say, I am not a politician.
Right.
I'm a leader. I do have Republican values as an independent, but I am pro-choice because I do believe that everyone are not or cannot be a mother.
Well, I'm pro-choice too. I'm pro-school choice.
Pro-school choice. That is a good one.
Thanks.
So I have a lot of questions. I'm going to get
sure.
Right to it. And I do find you to be a very inspiring man. And I thank you again so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Born in Detroit.
That's
and
true.
Based in Yonkers, New York. You were introduced to politics by your late grandmother. Tell me about that.
So my parents didn't have the greatest marriage and they got married young, as was normal at that time. But went through a divorce, and my mother was raised in New York. My father was raised in Michigan, and my mom took me to New York. And by the age of 6 or 7, I was being raised by my grandparents, which I'm very thankful for. They were both amazing people. My grandmother was my best friend. It's the reason why I'm in Florida. I came here after a university to take care of my grandmother, who was ill. She raised me, and I helped her when she needed it, and thank God I had them in my lives for as long as I did. But my grandparents, politically, they were split. My grandfather was a huge sports fan, a huge sports fanatic, and so at the dinner and my grandmother, she loved politics, but it was interesting at the dinner table because my grandfather wanted to talk about the Giants and the Yankees, and grandma wanted to talk about this newfound love that she had Ronald Reagan in 1980 when he was running for president and I was 10 years old. She would take me door to door for President Reagan and took me to the rallies and really got me involved in that process very early on in my life. And I'm so thankful for it. And I remember it, you know, to this day. And I remember her as well.
Wow. Yes. You can't forget about grandma.
No,
you know, grandmothers are so special, especially when not only taking us in, but giving us wisdom. And
Absolutely.
yes,
And
that
I'll tell you, when I was married and we were talking about having children, it was so important for me to have a daughter. My grandmother had just passed. Her name was Ruth, and it was very difficult having a child. It took a long time, a lot of prayers from rabbis and pastors, and finally we had a pregnancy, and it turned out to be a girl, and thank God, because she's my little Ruthie. So
Oh, you
thank
named her
God.
Ruth.
Absolutely. I couldn't
Oh,
not do that.
that's
So
right.
it's very important to me.
Yes. So you attended the University of Maryland,
Yes.
where
Yeah, okay.
you had a shocking act of anti-Semitism by your freshman roommate who placed a
Right.
swastika on the dorm room wall. Tell me about that, because I know that had to be absolutely alarming.
Well, the first semester of school was great. I was very good friends with my roommate. We went to parties together. We did so much together and became very good friends, I thought. And I took a train and a bus to school. I just for a second semester. And I went up to the third floor. I believe I was on the third floor, and I saw that I had my luggages with me, and the door was open a little bit, and I opened up that door, and the first thing that I saw was this big swastika on the wall, and it was certainly a horrible experience. I had gone through anti-Semitism as a kid, in grade school and in high school. While I was on the basketball team, and the star player threw me down three flights of stairs and said, excuse my language, fucking kike. So going through that again, it was a shock to me. Coming to Maryland, I wanted to leave New York, to be honest, to get all of that passed behind me. And like I said, the first semester was just wonderful and a great experience in every way at school. And to have to find that right before school starts was a horror. And it really stopped time for me. I saw that thing, and I said to myself, listen, either you can go through this your entire life, and for some reason God wants you to go through this, because it happened to me, like I said, many times in the past when I was a kid, or you could fight it. And there and then I decided I'm going to fight it, and I opened up the door, and my roommate Craig was sitting at his desk, and I asked him what that was about, and he didn't answer me, and we never spoke since that time. But I made it my mission in school, not to do well in my grades at that time, but to get Craig thrown out. And he was. And but I'll be honest with you, I don't regret any of the experiences that I had as a kid. All of those things made me who I am today. And like, that saying goes, where bad things happen to you only makes you stronger. And that was the case at that time, because I was harboring all of these bad feelings of when I was a kid. And then when I decided to fight it and embrace myself and being Jewish, it took that entire weight off my back. And today, if I see Craig, and I would love to see him, I would hug him and thank him for making me a Jew, and tell him that I don't harbor any ill feelings towards him, for what happened. I don't know why he did what he did, or what happened between the semesters. But I don't have any hate for him. It's something that happened, and I'm very glad that I became a fighter. And today I'm glad that I'm running for office. I believe my involvement in counterterrorism after 9/11, I believe my running for office has a lot to do with how I grew up with that type of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I have a question to ask because I noticed that, which I didn't have a full, growing up to understand of a Jew. Why is it that they feel, why do you think, in your opinion, that people automatically think that Jews are evil?
I understand what you're saying. I would hope not everybody does,
Right.
but Jews are a minority, and they've always been a small population in this world, and in the millions, where maybe Christians and Muslims are in the billions, and Jews, wherever they've gone, I'm proud to say they've had success stories, and they've succeeded, and stuck around even in the face of hate, even during the Holocaust and every time before that. And so I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Jews have been very successful, and they. And they're a very small population, and have been easy targets. Jews, until Israel came about, Jews weren't they weren't really fighters. They didn't they studied a lot. They read a lot of their religious texts, which I have, all of them. But they weren't really very into fighting, and I think that changed with Israel, but I think they've been easy targets throughout this world. I remember growing up with my grandparents. I also had the pleasure of knowing my mother's parents, my great grandparents. I knew my great grandmother till I was 15, and my great grandfather till I was 19, and they escaped the Holocaust. They left when things were starting to happen. Their families were decimated overseas. But I remember there was a story with my great grandmother, how she was on a train. And there was a black lady on the train with her, or not with her, but in the same car, and she was in the wrong car. She was in a car that we sh that at that time blacks weren't supposed to be, and the person checking the tickets and another individual picked up the black lady and threatened to throw her off the train. And my great grandmother, who was a frail woman, she stood between them and told them that if they throw that woman off the train, they're gonna have to throw her off the train as well. And I say that because my grandmother, who told me this story, she would always tell me that we always have to protect one another, and she saw what the problems that the black community was having with racism. And she said that we need to protect each other, meaning blacks and Jews, because not only is it right, but if one goes, then the other is sure to go next. And it's been that's been my experience, throughout my life, understanding that and embracing my own self and fighting hatred. Which is what I do.
Yes, that is what you do. Very proud of you too. Thank you so much. And to correct what I just stated, yes, I meant to say some Jews,
Right.
not all Jews. And I
Right.
do believe that. So thank you so much for explaining that. You have spent your life dedicated to protecting America and its allies from threats, both foreign and domestic. Why?
You know, it's also like when, you know, my great grandfather, when he came to this country, and he had supposedly $40 on him, and himself. He came through Ellis Island, and he told me that when he came here, he saw streets lined with gold. And he wasn't the only one that said that. That's been the experience of a number of immigrants coming to the United States. Certainly at that time, America meant prosperity, and my great grandfather, who was coming from an area where he was targeted for his religion, and how he was born, it was a big deal. His parents and his three sisters died in the death camps. He at 9 years old, he went to work in Germany in the coal mines because the family had no money, and he was sent to work at 9 years old. That's why he had muscles on his muscles. He was a strong guy, and when he started seeing what was going on in Germany, he contacted his family and said, "Hey, I heard about this place, America, that offers people freedom, and people aren't going through what we're going through in Poland and here now in Germany," and he was living in Poland, and his family said that that's their home. It's been there for generations, and they're going to stay, and they wound up killed. But he thank God he was able to come over here, and if he wasn't, and if America didn't open her arms to my great grandfather and great grandparents, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. I wouldn't even be a memory. So I thank God that I grew up in this country, and it's allowed me to prosper, and my family to prosper, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And it's why I feel that I need to give back to my country to help in the protection of the country, because I feel so strongly about the fact that she opened up her arms for my family when they needed it the most. And just like my grandmother, you know, when she needed me, I came here to help her, and America was here to help my family. And so I'll never forget that, and I'll always be proud to be American because of that.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing. What is the government responsibility? Which this is a very sensitive subject question, I should say. But what is the government's responsibility with regard to immigration management, in your opinion?
Okay, so you know, I'll tell you, like I said, my great grandfather came here. He came here through Ellis Island. Both of my his wife did as well. They spent many years working on their citizenship, and after a lot of work, they and time, they got it. My wife Emily, she's originally from Peru. She was born and raised in Peru. She came to the United States, and she wanted to be an American citizen. And she had luck in that she had gotten a sponsorship to teach, and she too, she spent years working on her citizenship. The job that she received, the teaching job, it didn't make her a lot of money. Most of the money went to an immigration attorney. The rest, she was able to have money for rent and food. She really had no life beyond that. But it meant so much to her to become an American that she worked hard to do it, and she was willing to do so. And she's offended when she sees people trying to cross the border and skip all of the work. And listen, I think it should be the process should be easier. I think there's certainly way too much red tape. The fact that she had to give so much money to an immigration attorney, I don't think that that was the greatest thing in the world. She barely had a life because of at that time because of that. All of her money's going to an immigration attorney. But she's offended when she sees people trying to skip the line in order to do that, and I feel the same way, and I think if people are going to come here, and they feel strongly about being American, then they should be doing it the right way. And albeit I believe in reforming the system to maybe make it a quicker and less costly process, but I don't believe that anybody should be coming here illegally. I think there's a it's wrong to do so, and I take it as a serious crime.
I do agree with you. I absolutely agree. You want to come here to America? I do feel that you should go through the process and the documents. And looking at YouTube, I notice how people who are crying out and stating what ISIS is doing and everything, but you've been here for over 5 years. And you didn't do absolutely anything to become a citizen. So I do agree. I do agree that if the government can get a hold of the majority of people whom are here that is not supposed to be here, we can do for more of the American people, because I think that's where the resources are lost. So I do agree. Thank you so much for explaining that. And what about ISIS? Because all I read and hear in the news and the newspaper and on YouTube is, of course they're going to be the bad guys. We know that. But what are they actually doing? Are they just gathering up people and taking them elsewhere? What are their job? What is their job?
They're taking orders from the federal government to go after, I believe I think they're going after those who they believe to be criminals
Okay.
or to have committed crime, and if anybody along the way has been found to be here illegally, it's my understanding they take them in as well. But I think first and foremost, they're going after those who have committed crimes beyond crossing the border illegally. Again, I think that's a crime in itself, but I'm talking about beyond that. They've taken in a lot of people, but under President Biden, a lot of people came in here.
True.
I think there was a green light that was given to start coming over the borders, and I think a lot of people made announcements overseas. Hey, the coast is clear. Let's go, and it's caused a huge problem in our country. It's first of all, it's an economic problem, but beyond that, there's a safety problem. I know I've been endorsed by Marie Espinoza. She's an advocate for the families who have been who's who have lost loved ones at the hands of illegal immigrants. So for me, it's these individuals, you cross over here illegally, you shouldn't be here, and you should be sent back to where you were. And if you committed crimes beyond that, you should be doing jail time. or worse.
Absolutely. So, the million-dollar question. Do you approve
Yes.
wall or no wall?
Oh, I approve of the wall. Look, I think it ends that problem. Certainly you need border patrol, but when you're dealing with so many individuals who are crossing the border, then having walls is not a bad thing. I don't think there's a problem with that. We have separation between our countries, so I don't think it changes our interaction with those countries, but it does stop criminals from coming over the border, including I might add terrorists. I remember when President Biden was president, I know there were a lot more than this, but I remember at one point there were reports about the knowledge of 14 Hezbollah coming over the border, and they, Hezbollah has set up shop. Hezbollah, in particular, the Lebanese terrorist group, they've set up shop in Venezuela and Colombia, and some of them have used that as a stopgap to come into the United States. And I remember one individual in particular, excuse me, one individual in particular, he was a bomb maker for Hezbollah, and he was headed for New York, and I'm sure for with with sinister purposes in mind. And many others have crossed the border from all of the different terrorist organizations and violent gangs. Listen, those individuals cause death in our country, and maybe far worse, in the near future. We don't know how many are in our country, and that's, you can know 14, and you may not know about 100 or 200 that actually got through without any knowledge from the authorities. So we know there are cells inside the country, I believe it needs to be stopped in any way possible. Border patrol, ICE, a wall, whatever it takes to stop these individuals from coming into our country, I think is a good thing.
I do agree. Is the wall being built? I haven't heard anything else about the wall. So
I know
is
they're
it?
talking about it. Part of it has been built or was built previously, and I know that they've been in active discussions about finishing it. So as we speak, just as I saw that less than a week ago. So I'm sure that it's going to take place, certainly as long as the Republicans are in power.
Okay. I'm going to touch a little bit about immigration policy. What is the right balance between securing borders, addressing the needs of undocumented immigrants, and streamlining the legal immigration process, in your opinion?
So, like I said, I using my wife as an example, streamlining the process, making it a quicker, easier process, less costly. Like I said, she spent years, paying for an immigration attorney. Here was
Right.
an, this was another this was another issue with regards to my wife because of the particular papers that she had at that time. When she started the process, she came here originally as a jewelry designer. She would set up tables or whatever and sell her jewelry or whatever. But she, as an immigrant with her status, she wasn't allowed to work beyond her sponsorship. So she was only able to teach. She's a teacher to this day as a result of being a teacher. She never was a teacher growing up. She was a jewelry designer. That's how she came to the United States, but she had to quit that Because she wasn't allowed to work outside of the sponsorship. I think that's wrong. If somebody's an entrepreneur and if it's making money for that particular person and also making money for the country, because when we make more money, the United States makes more money. To stop her from doing that and others from doing that, I think is wrong as well. But I think it needs to be more streamlined process is the term used, and I think that's necessary. The balance, I think if people cross here illegally, they need to be sent back. And I think all immigration to the United States needs to be legal. Somebody comes here illegally, regardless of the reason. I think they've got to think, if you're coming here to escape something from the rest of the world, you have to do it the right way. There's a process, whether you're escaping some horror or you just want to be an American citizen and go through the entire process of getting your citizenship. There's a legal process in doing it regardless. So I really have very little sympathy for people who are just crossing that border illegally. I have no sympathy whatsoever for those individuals who are fighting ICE in California. Not only they are legal to this country, but they're creating chaos for our nation. And it's not helping. It's not helping immigration. It's not helping anyone in this country.
Thank you. Thank you for answering that. In your opinion, how should the U.S. balance its role in global affairs? And how should it address ongoing conflicts and threats, in your opinion?
So this has certainly been a debate, definitely a debate in the Republican Party, as of late. What is our role in getting involved in conflicts overseas? And I think the answer to that is if something is going on overseas that is a threat to the United States, then the U.S. should be involved. If there is a threat to one of our allies, I also believe that the United States should stand by our allies. And I say such as Israel. Israel's become like a big hot potato within the Republican Party as of late. There have been some voices talking about starting off with talking about not getting involved in wars, but then winding up into a discussion that's bordering on anti-Semitism. But I think that we need to, like, I it, you know, if we're talking about Iran, I'm not sure how many people in the United States would be okay with Iran having nuclear weapons. God forbid anything like that came over our border. It would cause such damage. It could bring down our nation. Certainly, they could threaten Israel with annihilation. But it's not just Israel. I think 9/11 taught us that what happens overseas many times can come back to haunt us here at home. And so I was all in favor of the United States getting involved in that. But previous to that, let me just shut this off. I was not in favor of, when the US was getting involved in the Arab Spring, getting in, saying one day that it's our policy to support Hosni Mubarak, the leader of the president of Egypt, and then the next day calling for a coup against him, which is what happened when President Obama was president, and then moving on from that and going after Muammar Gaddafi when Gaddafi was no threat to the United States or anyone at that point. Certainly he was not a good guy. I shed no tears for him, but he had given over his WMD program to the United States during the war in Iraq at the very beginning of the war, and he really was no threat at all. So to get involved in that war, to me didn't make any sense, and nor did it make sense had we gotten involved in the war in Syria when there were those fighting against the Assad government. I didn't think that the U.S. should be involved. We had no business being involved. But when there is a legitimate threat, I think U.S. should have involvement. And to me, that is the case in Iran.
United States, we have nuclear war, right? We have nuclear.
We have nuclear weapons, sure.
Yes. Okay.
More than anybody, I think.
Okay. So every other country is going to want to do the same because every country is going to want to protect themselves, correct? Now, I'm totally against war. I feel that the United States should not be interfering with Ukraine. I don't like war. And what I see, even with Palestine, Gaza. And when I see children just being blown up, and it's heartbreaking. And at some point, enough is enough. The flag needs to go up. And that's just my opinion. That's just me because I love. So, and I'm all about humanity and everything, but to make America great again, I think that the United States, let's get here right. Let's get some of these, like you said, the people whom are just over here living off fat off the land and utilizing all our resources. Let's concentrate on that. But I'm not a politician, so I'm not in your seat. I don't see a lot of different things that you may see, but I'm just against the war.
Well, I don't want to. I really don't want to answer these things as a politician. I want to answer them honestly. But with regards to what's going on in Gaza, I mean, I don't think anybody is happy with as many children who have died as has been the case. But I have to ask a question. What should Israel do? I mean, if on October 7th, and this has been brought up so many times, maybe I'll bring it up in a different way. October 7th happens, and yes, 1,200 Israelis were killed, and 251 people were kidnapped. But outside of that, Hamas had fired thousands of rockets into Israel and overwhelmed Israel's air defense system. 2 years prior to that, Hamas was only able to fire hundreds of rockets into Israel, and Israel responded, but it was like a tit for tat thing. But when October 7th happened, and they were able to fire thousands of rockets w really within minutes and overwhelming Israel's air defense, I would ask the question, like, what recourse does Israel have, except to try to work to
Protect.
destroy that group? And if that and the same for Hezbollah, who at the time was 10 times as powerful and had 10 times the firepower as Hamas, the same. Or a mortal threat with regards to the Iranian regime with them attempting to build nuclear weapons. But Gaza in particular, Israel's overwhelmed. Israel needs to go in and take out Hamas. And Hamas has built an underground city underneath Gaza where Israel cannot detect what's going on under the ground. And if Israel's tasked with destroying that terrorist organization, and that terrorist organization is It has built these tunnels under civilian neighborhoods, under hospitals, under these densely populated cities, and at the same time, Egypt, their brethren, are not willing to open up the doors to let them in. What's Israel supposed to do? How can Israel just say we're finished, and then let that process, come once again later? Because in the end, they'll wind up getting weapons, as they have in the past, and as they will in the future, unless that group is gone. So I would ask, what would you do if you're Israel? Do you just, do you say, it's finished and go home, or do you end the process? I know, like you said, watching children die, and we're seeing images constantly on YouTube and social media. So nobody wants to see that. And it's caused a lot of dissension for Israel, including, like I said, inside my own political party. But in the end, I don't know what Israel can do beyond going after Hamas in such a way that they destroy that organization, whether it looks nice or not, or many people are unfortunately dying in the process because Hamas is hiding underground and has Israel's hostages, and they're hiding behind these civilian populations. And on top of that, they don't dress. The only time they dress in uniform is when they give back a hostage or two. They otherwise they're dressed like civilians. So it's a horrible situation.
It is.
But if I were Israel, I would say you have to destroy Hamas, and if you can't, if you're defending your civilians, your own citizens, then that needs to take place. It's this what happened on October 7th was way beyond the suicide attacks and the stabbings and the shootings and the snipers and the car rammings. It was just enough that they need to just rid themselves of the terrorists, and then I believe in the end they're going to have peace. And I don't just think they're going to have peace with those Palestinians, but I think in the end they're going to have peace with the entire neighborhood. Iran is funding Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis and Assad before he was taken down, and others in Iraq, and they're funding terrorist organizations who are causing trouble. But if that doesn't if that in Iran there's different leadership, and I believe that the former Shah of Iran's son is going to be the next leader or somebody close to him in Iran. He personally told me that he, right when he gets into power, if and when he does, he's going to create a three-part peace accord between America, Israel, and Iran. I just believe there's going to be Abraham Accords throughout that area, peace in the Middle East finally, and hopefully all of this death and bloodshed is going to be behind us. I'm not happy about all the deaths that are taking place, but I think in the end, there's going to be a mass peace in the Middle East, and this need for all of these wars to take place constantly. I think that's going to be over very soon. I believe very soon, and I know I've been involved with the Iranian opposition for the past 17 years, so I could say this. I really believe very soon there is going to be mass peace in the Middle East, and this bloodshed is going to be behind us, and we're going to be talking about economic development and trade and peaceful relations between most, if not all, of those countries in the Middle East, instead of terrorists and finding and funding giant military, infrastructures over there. I do believe that's going to be behind us very soon.
Good. I am inspired by your passion, Joe, and
Thank you.
I'm absolutely proud that you are determined to bring awareness about such a sensitive subject as we're discussing today, that the world needs to know. Also, we must be educated. So I thank you so much for that. What should
And that's why I believe in school choice for
Right?
kids that are in failing schools. They should be able to have the choice to get out of that. I believe in vocational training for our schools, where
Yes.
all the high schools in America. I would like to see a national vocational training project to have all of the high schools teaching. So many kids graduating high school, they're electing not to go into college or university, but so many of them just stay home and eat off their parents and eat off the government. I think they need to have some choices as well, and be able to be able to find a job immediately. Sorry to cut you off, but
Absolutely,
I
I'm
want to
with
mention that.
you. Yes, I'm with you. What should the government be doing to ensure equal treatment under the law?
Wow, that's a good one. I think everybody should be treated equally. I don't know ha how else to put it. The government is there to make life easy for the population, also to protect the population from threats, to stop chaos and anarchy from taking place in the streets, like we see in California.
Right.
But I think everybody should be treated equally. And I think if we actually did that, we would have a much happier society.
Do agree. Do you think there are issues that the Republicans and the Democrats can agree on? And if so, which ones? Just in your opinion. Give me two.
Two issues that they can agree on. That's a really good one.
Are there any? Are we that much just out of
I think
balance?
I you know I th America is more polarized than it's ever been in our history. I remember, like I said, my grandmother, taking me, to the Reagan rallies. But I remember when I was in high school, they had Democrats that supported President Reagan, and they worked together for a lot of things. Even when Bill Clinton was in office, we were starting to have like this, hate relationship between the parties. Even then, the parties were somewhat working together. Newt Gingrich and the Clinton administration, even though they were at odds with each other, and the Republicans were trying to impeach the president, all of that stuff. But regardless of that, they worked together on different things like welfare reform and other things that they could agree on, in the country would benefit and prosper from it. But today it's so difficult on any issue to maybe we're all against human trafficking. I would like to
Yeah,
think
maybe that. Yeah.
that we're all against that and other things that do harm to our children.
Agree.
Really, children can bring together the parties, I think.
Well, yes, don't they? So I have my other $1 million question for
Uh-oh.
you. So, yes, I voted for Trump.
Yes, me too.
Okay. And
I
I
endorsed him.
hear it's a lot of negative for some of the things that he's doing. Now, no president is ever going to get absolutely everything right. But
Right.
I come from the corporate world. I was trained in management. So I get it. I understand. I understand that sometimes when you talk about deficits and money and things like that, you have to go in, you have to break down the system, whether anyone likes it or not. You do. And some things are going to suffer, but if you are a good leader, CEO of a company, then you're going to put it back together and you're going to make things work. But you're not going to have the same people there. That reason is the part of the reason. I'm not saying everyone has done this, of this deficit. So do you agree or disagree with President Donald Trump's policies, or do you have some appreciation for him and his work he is doing?
Well, if you're asking me if I would have supported the big, beautiful bill, I would have. I agree with his policies. I agree with strong borders. I agree with the tax cut. I agree with trying to bring businesses back to the United States. During World War II, we were after World War II, we were making all the products for the world. We were the world leader in that. And then things gradually started to change, and all of a sudden we wake up one day and all of our companies that are American wind up in China, making products for whatever reason, tax policy or cheap labor or what have you. I believe very strongly in those companies coming back to this country and bringing back the production to the United States. Creates jobs and it creates money for our country. I believe that we should be not only energy independent but energy dominant. I don't want America going to countries like Venezuela or Saudi Arabia and begging them for fuel. I want to see us have our own supply and have those countries, telling us that they want our fuel.
But
So
we do have our own supply, correct?
we do have our own supply,
Okay.
and I think it needs to be more. And if Joe Biden had been reelected or Kamala Harris, I believe that we would have been drifting away from that, and we would have been going to places like Venezuela and Saudi Arabia. And
I do agree.
I think it's dangerous.
I do agree.
So I agree that we should have we should support having police officers. I thought it was like crazy talk when Democrats were talking about defunding police, whether they like them or not. They're protecting our communities, and so I buy into the Trump what President Trump has been doing. And had it not been for COVID, I really believe that we were headed into such a great place during the first administration, and I believe we're going to get there now. I don't know who's going to come after President Trump, but I hope they continue with strong policies, because I agree with them.
I do agree with you. I thought defunding the police was something that was just totally ignorant, in my opinion. I am against racism, but I feel that everyone has a little racism in. Me, I'm racist. I'm racist against whoever's racist against me. I'm racist against certain things that I just don't agree with. But that's okay because I still love and I give that back. But defunding the police is like, come on, who's going to run the communities and the streets? We need the police. But I do believe of getting rid of the ones that are racist. Ongoing training is needed. And also counseling is needed for police officers because not all police officers are bad. And the respect for a police officer has to remain in place.
which is
So
something that the youth, I'm not sure the youth growing up today, like I see videos of people throwing things at police in clear daylight. I mean, the police aren't
right.
there to, I see it in situations where police, they're not there to cause any trouble or anything, just standing around, people are throwing things at them. There is
Well,
no
some of
respect.
the bad police officers have given a police officers that's trying to do their job a bad name. So it's
But I think also there's a lot of disrespect in society today. When I was being raised by my grandparents, they taught me to respect my elders and
yeah.
respect those in positions of safety and security, like the police and the fire department. My grandparents always told me to thank them for helping. But I see like a lot of people growing up today that really have lost total respect for any type of authority, and it's
Blame the government for that. It started off with the Biden administration when they had the snag and grab situation, and it was like, just go steal. You can just go steal, and nobody can do anything, and they just have insurance. That's ignorance to me, and that is something that should never have came from our president or any leader pertaining to what the values are. So
Right.
my last question for you is, what are your fundamental life values?
Well, I'm an observant. I'm part of the observant Jewish community, and so I would like to think that I put morality in a very high place in my life, and as congressman, certainly. I would look to do the right thing. I am a politician. I understand. I'm running for office. I could tell you also that we have this our prayer book, the Siddur. I didn't think I'd be showing this, but this is our prayer book in synagogue, the
Okay.
Siddur, and inside this prayer book. There's something very important. It's called Perkei Avos. It's ethics of the fathers, of the father, ethics of my father. And in there, it talks about how people should deal with politicians, and it's actually not the nicest thing. And maybe I shouldn't be discussing this, but it's true. It says, never trust a politician because they will always tell you something that is there to benefit themselves and not others. And I think that is true for the most part with politicians. I'm not the biggest fan of most politicians, but I think that we need in order to have an ethical society, we need ethical leaders. We
Leaders,
need people
absolutely.
who will take moral stands, and when politicians are caught, in wrongdoing, it always leaves a stain,
It does.
and causes more, irreverence in our society, and people that don't look up to authority and they just look down to authority. And so I believe that as a congressman, I'm going to look to do the right thing. I'm going to protect my nation. I'm going to continue to go after the bad guys in my life and my expertise in national security and counterterrorism. I'm going to use that to protect this nation. I'm not going to want to get involved in any unnecessary wars overseas, but if something is taking place overseas that threatens the United States, I think we should be involved. And I'm going to always look to protect our most vulnerable in our society, those who are sick, the elderly, and our children, who need better choices growing up in their education and in schools and for their future, because their future is America's future. And if we raise a bunch of kids that have no respect
Correct.
for elders or for authority, then that's what we're going to get when they get to be our age. It's going to be a nation of chaos, and I don't want to see that. I want our country is not that old, but I want to see our country thrive in the future, long after I'm gone. I have a 12-year-old daughter that I hope for the best for, and I pray for the best for her and the other people that are young like her, that this country is continues to be as great as when it was founded until today. So I love my nation. God bless America.
God bless America. Joe, it has been a pleasure having you on my show. Do you have any last minute comments you would like to say?
Sure. Go to kaufmanforcongress.com, KAUFMAN, 1F1N, and please donate and volunteer and spread the word. I need to be in Congress because of my background. It's certainly it's a dream of mine to serve as congressman, but much bigger than that, because of my background in national security, I need to serve. And so I thank you very much for having me today.
You're
It's been a
so
pleasure.
welcome. I hope you enjoyed yourself. And
Absolutely.
the conversation is interesting. Me and you can continue to go on, so you're going to have to come back.
And I'll tell you, coming on here, like I was discussing with my staffer Ronnie, he who set this up, he was reading about it, and it didn't seem like very political,
Right.
like so and he was like, maybe should we do this? Should we not do that? I was like, yeah, let's do it. She wants to talk about real life.
That's
I'm down for that. So
right.
thank you. I loved it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Well, readers, I have reached my destination, and I leave you with this quote. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. Abraham Lincoln. Until next time, do have a wonderful, blessed, beautiful day. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.